Eugenius, as I mentioned earlier, extended the notion of crusade. He offered crusader indulgences to wars going on in Spain and in the Baltic. Duke Henry the Lion of Saxony, the wealth, that's his family, the wealth Duke of Saxony in northern Germany, headed up a crusade of Germans and Danes to beat the pagan Baltic peoples. These are the old Prussians, the Letts, as they're called. They spoke a Baltic language remotely related to Slavic. They were still pagans, and they're living along the southern and eastern shores of the Baltic. That expedition didn't go off so fortunately in some ways. There were some important gains made. He also gave crusader indulgences in Spain. Alfonso VII waged a war of the so-called Reconquista. Actually, in the mid-12th century, probably the notion of Reconquista really began to coalesce under the impact of these crusades. That proved a quite remarkable success. Major areas were recovered in central Spain and colonized. However, the real effort was going to be, of course, directed towards defending Jerusalem. And here, Bernard was of enormous assistance. Bernard had a absolutely willing participant in King Louis VII of France, the Capetian King of France. Louis was one of the most monkish kings to rule. His descendant, St. Louis IX, would be just as pious as Louis VII. Louis VII reputedly lived in the most drab of conditions in Paris, slept on the stone floor, was constantly worried about his sins. Particularly weighing on his mind was the so-called massacre of Vitry, when a group of women and children fled into a church during one of the wars. The church was set afire, and Louis for years remembered the anguish of the cries of those innocents who cried out for help, but Louis's soldiers could not get to them. So in many ways, for Louis, the Second Crusade was an expiation of his own sins and in his own belief in his unworthiness to the throne. And in that belief, Louis was really quite correct. Louis's ministers were aghast that he was doing this. His leading minister, Abbot Suger of Saint-Denis, said you couldn't do this. The monarchy could not withstand his absence, but Louis was insistent. Louis had made a brilliant marriage in Eleanor of Aquitaine, who was the niece of the Prince of Antioch. Eleanor, without a doubt, is one of the most absolutely engaging women of all the Middle Ages, if not all of history. She was brilliant. She was the product of the court of Aquitaine, conversant in several languages, patroness of troubadour poetry, a brilliant and fascinating woman, witty, married to the dullest and most tediously pious of husbands. It was a political marriage that merged the great Aquitaine and all of its vassals to the rather modest domains of the King of France. And that marriage really made the King of France look like a respectable power, but he really owed it to his wife. And Eleanor was more than eager to go on crusade. It was an adventure. As she traveled east, she held a brilliant court. Some would say were scandalized. Some of her maidens dressed up as Amazon. There were all sorts of bizarre stories told about it, which shocked her husband and her husband's attendants. She was the granddaughter of a crusader, William IX, who was on that ill-fated crusade of 1101. Her uncle was in Antioch. She loved the idea of seeing Uncle Ray, who was rather brilliant and intriguing conversationalist himself. Therefore, Eleanor, probably for the wrong reasons, was more than eager to undertake the crusade. And it was probably one of the most mismatched royal marriages of the whole 12th century. The two of them went out on crusade, and the result was the marriage didn't survive the crusade. There was a divorce within years of their return. They were already estranged and curious and enough about each other on how they were so different, and the crusade just ruined the marriage.